Okay, just gone 12 minutes before 11 o'clock. You're listening to the executive director of Biba and the president as well as we celebrate Global Business Week, and they're having their week of activities here on Down to Brass Tacks. We'll be right back.
Join us tonight, October 26th at 7 p.m. for our annual public discussion forum. The topic being explored is diversity of global business, the Barbados unique perspective. This topic will examine diversity and the role it plays within global business in Barbados. Senator the Honorable Liesl Cummins, Minister of Tourism and International Transport, Gregory McConney, President and CEO of Brookfield International Bank, Dr. Antonio Aline, lecturer in economics, University of the West Indies, Cape Town Campus, and moderator Henderson Holmes, former executive director of Biba, will be panelists for the discussion. Visit www.gbw.biba.bb or call 246-537-2422 for information on how to register.
Welcome back to the Monday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Remember, we got Biba on 10 to 12. We're dealing all things international business for this Global Business Week 2020. We go to the telephone lines and we say good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Corey. Good morning to the panelists from Biba. And I heard the lady speak just now, and I was following her, and I thought she was quite accurate in trying to secure the reputation of Barbados as a peaceful jurisdiction. But then she said she doubted that there are many other places when she referred to the ambassador's run and history that he could do that. So I just want to remind her not to make those comparisons. But the question I have for Biba, last year the president of the Caribbean Development Bank, Dr. Warren Smith, he had addressed the Biba's annual conference, and he had urged Biba to take a collective approach, because CARICOM at the 13th intersessional meeting has agreed that we need a collective approach to deal with the whole question of blacklisting. So I want to know what Biba is doing from a collective perspective, not on a national level, because I am of the view that this thing needs a regional approach. So could you outline for me the measures that have been taken since the utterances of Dr. Warren Smith about the road that we need to take in tackling this blacklisting problem? Hello?
Yes, go ahead. Elaine, panel, go ahead right at this time. Thanks for the question.
Thank you very much, caller, and I'm very pleased to see that you are at least paid attention, even if you didn't actually attend our conference last year. I would just say, so this is twofold. One, this is a national effort, and therefore our government takes the lead. But we are very happy to know, having discussed with the special advisor to the Prime Minister and also our Minister of International Business, that yes, they are taking a collective approach to this. I know that CARICOM has made some pronouncements on this, and they're looking at it from their level. I know that we are also, what I've heard, looking at forming again a coalition in the same way that we did with the very first blacklisting back in the 90s, where we rallied other Caribbean nations and other, actually not just Caribbean, but also small international business jurisdictions across the world, rallied them together in the same fight. And I've heard that we're looking to do this again. From our end, we have also been looking at other Caribbean agencies or associations that are impacted. So for example, we would have reached out to the Caribbean Association of Banks and started discussions with them, because obviously this has implications for their members in terms of, as I noted to you before, difficulties with financial transactions, etc., making it more costly and difficult. So we have already started looking at where we too can create synergies to be able to add that voice, that collective voice to fighting these efforts.
Carlo?
Yes. No, I really appreciate that though, but I want to get a sense of, even though we are transparent, in my view, I think we give them the necessary information that they want. Why are we constantly appearing on the list among the names of countries blacklisted? What is it that you think we need to do to stop that from happening?
I want to say that we are constantly, I mean, we did get off the blacklist.
But it reoccurs. Let me use the word reoccurs.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it seems that once we have, passed the hurdle with one, some other challenge is thrown up. And honestly, what can we do? I mean, really, the goalpost has been set.
Yeah.
Outside of Barbados. The rules of the game have been set outside of Barbados. And I think it really does come back to us taking a stand at some point and saying, okay, as a sovereign nation, this is how far we are prepared to go.
Absolutely.
No more. But,
thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. I was waiting for somebody to say that, because I believe we need to take a stand as a nation, declare our sovereignty, and let them know this is the position that you put us in because you make these rules that are so onerous. And you keep moving the goalposts each and every time so that every time we reach one stage, we find ourselves back at stage one because you keep moving it. And I want us to stand up as a nation and say that to these developed OECD countries that consistently put islands like Barbados, sometimes you find even Bermuda sometimes can get on that list if my mind serves me correctly. But we need to take a stand and tell them off. Not tell them off in a bad way, but tell them where we stand.
I want to piggyback on your point, Carmel, and add to this. I wouldn't say for us to stand up, but I think it may be more effective if we were able to do it as a bloc, as a CARICOM and so on. I'll tell you why. I remember back in between 2001 and 2009, we had a lot of challenges in relation to the fight against HIV on the World Health Organization and so on. And they were ranked Barbados, Bermuda, some of these other countries, Bahamas, as upper middle income. And we couldn't get the grant funding that we required. And a fight ensued on that where I don't know if we could tell off and ignore, because as you said, there are implications where we actually lose business in the meantime. So the whole idea is
or Prime Minister, who is also the Minister of Finance, that she has been through back channels speaking to the Ministers of Finance in the European Union about this. And we know publicly that her stance has been in certain matters that we are a sovereign nation, and we need to have that self-determination. So I wouldn't say that message is not being sent, but I think we are going to benefit from actually adding more voices to ours. And that's why I said earlier that we're very encouraged to hear, having heard from our Minister of Finance and from one of the special advisors to the Prime Minister, who also sits within our membership, that this collective approach is being taken.
If I may join in here. So we are in a battle. So they've been round one, round two, etc. And if we look at, we first have to decide what the one coming against us wants to achieve. And when we understand what they want to achieve, we have to say, okay, so we managed to survive or get past it this time around. We have to ask ourselves, did they achieve it? And then we say, no, they've not achieved it. We've got to expect they're going to come again with some other means to try to achieve that. And I think we have come to understand what these nations are trying to achieve. And the reality is, it is the complete annihilation of our international business sector, of our stance and position as an international financial center. So let's talk for a moment about motivated reasoning, because this is their approach. All right, motivated reasoning, you start with a conclusions, then you form a goal, and then you develop some reasoning to get to that goal. All right, so motivational reasoning suggests reasoning processes, that's information selection, evaluation, attitude, formation, judgment, and decision making. They're all influenced by motivations or goals. So the OECD, Global Forum, EU, and the list goes on, have a goal in their mind, have a determination in their mind, a motivation, and all of their motivations and all of their reasoning now are aimed at getting to that goal. So it's the justifications aren't always there, the math don't always add up, the decisions don't add up, but they have that goal that is motivating their reasoning and their bad acting. So the reality is that this will continue to bombard us. Again, what we have to do is internally manage what we can control. Back to the collective, we were all very happy when Invest Barbados put out their response to this, because Barbados and Anguilla were placed on this list. And in the messaging, Invest Barbados, which is an entity that comes directly under the Ministry of Finance, the Prime Minister, and they mentioned Barbados and Anguilla in that. So right away, we were defending Barbados' stance and defending the actions also against Anguilla. As it relates to what Biba does, Carmel, you and I have had quite a few meetings recently. We've had meetings with the Caribbean Bankers Association, which is, again, a regional group. We've had meetings with the, not the tribunal, the ones dealing with arbitration, the Caribbean Court of Arbitration. So we are trying our best, while the governments are also doing it, to have linkages and discussions with many Caribbean bodies as possible to get a collective, so we understand what we can do together, how we can build together, how we can tackle all these issues together. But the reality is, these guys are motivated by an endpoint, and then they use false narrative and bad decisioning to impact on us to get to that endpoint. What we have to do is master what we can control. What we have to do, have to be the best at business facilitation, have to be the best at immigration policies, have to be the best at registering companies, has to be the best at doing the things whereby we are still attractive. And here's what's going on now. While we wait for things to change as it relates to getting off the black listings, a lot of things are happening. We look at we have immigration legislation that's coming shortly. We looked at the easy pay system and other things that Carmel has said that the government has done better during COVID. The government is right now looking at bringing technologically advancement to KIPO. You know, so while we're here, we're not sitting doing anything. We're trying to find ways to better do business. So it's important that Biba, the service providers, the companies, everybody do the best job that they can and to prepare for the moments that when these black listings are listed, that we are gung-ho and ready to go hard and to grow the sector.
All right, Carly, will I have any other comment or?
Just this last comment. Mm-hmm. You've heard of SIDS, Small Island Developing Group. They had lobbied hard as a group against the issues that impact upon small island developing states, and they gain a space at the highest level, at the United Nations level. I think that we would need to create something like a SIDS in order to advance our advocacy against this sort of treatment by these developed countries. I think it's unfair, and it's high time they give us breathing space by which we can develop our economies. I'm sick and tired of every time we have to curry favor to them, every time we have to adjust, and sometimes they don't even understand our own local context, our own regional context. So I think this high time we need an umbrella body such like SIDS. I'm not calling it SIDS, but perhaps this is where we could take a stand and be recognized as a community of sovereign states that is telling these people, hey, look, you are really interfering with the development of our poor, open economies, and we're trying to do our best. And I want to thank you for the discussion and truly appreciate your time on the air. Thank you.
I appreciate your questions, Colin.
Thank you, too, for calling.
Yeah, thank you. Very good. My only fear is that I know that if we have two CARICOM nations affected, sometimes we don't engage unless the pinch is on our foot. You know, the shoe pinching our toe, we don't want to engage. And a proper working CARICOM community for me is one that's able to address these issues as a bloc, regardless of who affected. Because if you touch one, you touch all. And for me, that's the way that we should be operating. It's now 7 minutes after 11 o'clock. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, actually, it's more than just the... So you would have had Barbados and Anguilla being put onto Annex 1, but Trinidad has also been listed under a different annex. This is on the tax side, and then on the anti-money laundering side, we were joined by the Bahamas and Jamaica. So it's actually there is actually quite a few CARICOM or Caribbean nations that have been affected by these.
My point, Remy, is even if it was just one, all of them need to come together and put the fight to those people. We take another call, though. Good morning and welcome. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, good morning.
Blessed morning to all.
Good morning.
Thank God for this day. This is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it.
Be glad in it.
And he shall say, the earth is the Lord and all its fullness. The Psalms even mention, let all the people praise him. The great continents, those in the islands of the sea, give praises unto God. So even God recognizes our importance as small islands, the islands of the sea, wherever people are. It amazes me how Corey can probably correct me. It's 1948, 50 around there when we first started to talk about CARICOM. Corey?
No, I know we spoke about the Federation first.
Right.
And CARICOM was kind of a manifestation out of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we should know by now that we can't go it alone, though. Now that we can see the whole earth by way of Google, and we look at the whole earth, Barbados and these islands of the sea, as the Bible mentioned, it's just a little pink prick. All right? In there. Mm-hmm. And therefore, these people don't really have to care about us. But we talking about give us a break and give us an opportunity. We as human beings have enough in us to take these opportunities, to dwell together, to work together. I would like to see CARICOM doing what they were mandated to do. Because I do not understand how they could put blacklisting on us, especially now that our Prime Minister has opened up to the bringing in of this tourism, what's called it?
The welcome stamp.
The welcome stamp. And as the young lady was saying, somebody couldn't get a house here because the funds couldn't be transferred. And there are so many countries out there that are bigger, great countries, as the word say, and they're doing a lot of nefarious deeds, though.
What I want us through the discussion to do is to maintain objective and look at the thing as a whole. There are legitimate concerns that the international players will have, so that you don't have unfair competition and so on. The WTO, from the form into that, I knew that we would have some problems, right? And the whole idea is this whole idea of equity versus equality. So, for instance, you want to create an even playing field across the board. So they would say, okay, if we have all the same rules for all the players, that's equality. But it's not because some have natural advantages in terms of the size, the economy, and so on. And it's really for us to put those types of cases. It's in our interest to do so. But when the other point, and I want to finish on this point where your discussion is going, you got to understand the whole idea of sovereignty. It works for and against us. So in terms of sovereignty, we want to push this case. And I'm putting this to the B before us too. We push this case of sovereignty. So we want to be able to be sovereign and do as we are doing. And at the same time, when we look at CARICOM, the whole idea of sovereignty is to me one of the measures that undermine CARICOM, because each person wants to be sovereign. And that is why when we go back to the West Indian Federation from 1958, we had issues there. We went to CARIFTA in 1965. We have issues there. We had CARICOM now 1973. We still have issues there. And it's not only us, because if you look and see what's happening in the European Union with Brexit and so on, these issues, mankind, like sometimes they want silos, they want kingdoms, they want fiefdom. It happens right across the world. But the mentality of us, we need to understand as a Caribbean people. And I believe that a lot of the times, the people, I travel the Caribbean all the time, the issue is not the people. The issue a lot of times are the leaders. I don't know what happened when people elevate to that level. And it's not just to knock them for knocking them safe. But I like when we as Caribbean people on the ground have these types of conversations. And hopefully it can be a bottom up so that leaders can understand, look, we just need to come together, man. That Full stop. We just need to come together and work as in our interests as a Caribbean community, CARICOM.
We need to go as a body.
Correct, as a
and
body.
Even when it comes to the reparations and things like that, they need to go as a body.
Mm-hmm. All right, ma'am. I want to thank you for that, because I actually want to get in some of these interesting comments from the WhatsApp and questions coming to you all guys directly. So someone is asking, what is a risk matrix? Let's go with that quickly first. What is a risk matrix? Now, Derek, you spoke about that earlier, so for the benefit of our audience, could you break that down for us?
Derek, you're on mute.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good, thanks, Carmel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Any corporation has a enterprise risk framework, which they have a number of parameters, which they analyze everything that they do, every revenue stream, every business that they're in. Now, specifically to this one, any entity that is looking into a new initiative has a number of things that it has to get past to get over that hurdle to say, yes, let's implement. That really is your risk matrix. And you're going to look at every item, and you're going to weight every item based on risk and return. And at the end of the day, you're going to have a hurdle and say, maybe if your matrix spits out 70%, you do it. If it's below 70%, it's a no-go. So for looking at a jurisdiction to set up in, you're going to look at it's going to be different across entities, but you're going to look at economic stability, political stability. You may look at social stability, look at banking. You are going to look at the treatment from an AML perspective and tax, and a tax perspective. And that's where the blacklistings come into play, whether it's a blacklisted country, a gray listed country, et cetera. You may even look at the ratings of its sovereign ratings from a Standard & Poor's and Moody's perspective. So all of these things come into play. If you have maybe 8 parameters and you are strong in 4 of these parameters, scoring highly, and not so strong in the other 4, and your overall rating is 70% or below, you will make a decision. You know what? I can't incorporate in that jurisdiction. I don't want to do business in that jurisdiction. But maybe if you are there and you have 7 of these parameters, you're strong enough and it's tending towards doing business, you may have to weight whether it's a blacklisted or sanctioned jurisdiction pretty highly. So the fact that it's a sanctioned jurisdiction or a high-risk jurisdiction, that alone will negate all the other positives and say, no, my entity cannot have a subsidiary or a sister company in that jurisdiction because of my board, because of my shareholders, because of some level of corporate responsibility, just because of the cost of doing so, the reputational risk of doing so. So that's the risk matrix. It is a risk or cost benefit look, parameter by parameter, and scoring that to see whether or not it's in the best interest of the organization to establish in that jurisdiction. And a very weighty parameter is the global, the country risk rating of that jurisdiction, right? Which can be embodied in sanction, any sanctions, listings, et cetera.
And I think, Corey, we can see a real live example of that having happened right here in Barbados, maybe 3-4 years ago, when Sagicor decided to relocate its headquarters from here to either Bermuda or Bahamas. Obviously, it wasn't because of blacklisting, but there were other things happening in terms of or credit risk things that were causing it to be very costly for them to operate from here. You know, so these things are not esoteric. They're not just happening in a vacuum. They have real implications for how businesses operate.
Excellent. I believe that listening to all of these things, I think it gives us a better understanding. One of the things that's being highlighted here is the fact that sometimes these things, and I think both of you would have alluded to this at some point, some of these things are happening in the background as well in relation to when we talk about lobbying together as a group. Someone is now highlighting that for me, and we're going to go deeper into that when we return. This is the Monday edition of Down to Brass Tacks with the folks over at Biba. We are having a good time.
Global Business Week 2020 flagship event is the virtual conference from October 28th to 30th. As Barbados repositions itself as a hub for global business, we adopted the theme, The Evolution of Global Business, for the conference. It speaks for itself and is more relevant than ever in today's dynamic environment. Over 3 days, a combination of live and on-demand plenary sessions and technical workshops will capture the imagination as the theme is explored. For more information, visit www.gbw.biba.bb or call 246-537-2422.
Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks, the Monday edition. We go until noon with the Barbados International Business Association as they celebrate their Global Business Week 2020. And this is part of the week of activities. Now, over to the WhatsApp, we see one here saying, I totally agree with the first caller. I don't believe that anyone should dictate or tax policies. A country should be allowed to design its tax policies to suit its economic goals. Now, one other interesting one here, it says, I'm here listening to your program. CARICOM does speak on this in multiple fora. This has been the case for some time. There is perhaps an absence of media coverage of these interventions. As you might be aware, individual CARICOM states are assigned specific portfolios for like security, health, etc. So to suggest that there is not a CARICOM approach is not quite accurate. I can assure you, for example, that at every UN General Assembly, WTO, OAS meeting, etc., these matters are raised, and I could go on. And I did suspect that. I know CARICOM have these sub-bodies dealing with different things, so I do imagine that they would actually be tackling these type of issues. There are two other interesting ones I wanted to get to here. This one says, good morning. I did not specifically hear the guests address anti-money laundering. They address taxes. Also, do the Caribbean nations not use progressive lobbyists at these important international organizations whose role is to stay ahead of the critical issues and move proactively rather than reactively when sanctions are passed? So that's a two-part one there I want to put to the panelists right now.
Hi, yes. So let's touch the AML one first. As I said before, we just got marked on the tax side for our position 2015 to 2018, ignoring what we've done since. We on the AML side has to look at what our regulators have done over the past few years. Our regulators have strengthened their inspection teams and their compliance teams. This is the Central Bank, the FSC, and the Ministry of International Business. Have new departments staffed to go into and inspect their licensees. The FSC license a number of financial institutions, the Central Bank, banks at different tiers, the Ministry of International Business, the corporate and trust service providers, and they've all stepped up their work. Okay, I can speak to this from having left my previous post, and now also I recently joined the team at Amicorp Banking Trust, and I have sight of the inspection reports to see that the Central Bank has come in. I have done their reviews, they've responded to it. That was the case at the other institutions. So our regulators are doing their work. They're strengthening themselves. And the reality is, if you look, there are very little or no instances within our jurisdiction of major money laundering cases. You got to look for, if you want to see money laundering cases that have been real and trying to prove it, you got to look to the USA, you got to look to Canada, you got to look to Europe, you got to look to the first world. Okay, the reality is we have strengthened and we continue to strengthen. The Attorney General's office is dealing with that aspect. And we expect that by the mid-2021 that we will see some movement there as they continue to fight that front also. So again, it's another case of we have done a whole lot of what have been set before us. The regulators are exercising themselves correctly, and we are confident that mid-year we should see some change in that blacklisting also.
There's another one here that follows up that. It says, Corey, there's a documentary on Al Jazeera English called The Cyprus Papers. Check it out. Barbados does not have the capacity to scrutinize its so-called investors, especially with an economy depending on tourists. Nobody asks where did the money come from, and Barbados is in an American jurisdiction as far as Europe is concerned. How do you respond to that?
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely wrong. Foreign direct investment into Barbados, transactions that happen through Barbados for our clients, we have a rigorous KYC policy. All the institutions do KYC and KYCC. KYC being know your client, KYCC being know your client's client. And we understand, we do our best. We have the two IDs, we have the proof of address, we get as best we can, and we assess these using intelligent databases to screen clients, and not only for the onboarding process, but to monitor the transactions and the entities in Barbados. And that's what the central bank is trying to review when they do inspections. That's what the FSC is reviewing when they do inspections. That's what the Ministry of International Business is reviewing when they do inspections. That the service providers are doing their best to screen the clients. So we have a rigorous due diligence and enhanced due diligence process in our systems, within our service providers. Are they perfect? Nowhere in the world are they perfect, because reality is people attempting to do dubious things with their money have been attempting to do it for years. And sometimes when they get to a specific jurisdiction, money may have been layered, as we call it in the AML, anti-AML processes. But the reality is Barbados has the capacity to know the origin, the source of funds, the source of wealth. Okay, and when you ask a potential client the source of wealth and source of funds, you are not just ticking a box, they're providing evidence for you to review the source of wealth and the source of funds. So you have to have the capacity. We have the capacity, and our correspondent banks expect us to have the capacity. And where it was weak in the past in some areas, the institutions have done their best to strengthen it. That's why there was a time 10 years ago you could do a global transaction with one piece of paper, no more. Then it moved from that to you needed two pieces of paper for this transaction. Now the reality is sometimes you need a full dossier to put through a transaction. Where if it's a loan or a contract, you need sight of the contract, and we request that and we get that. If you are sending funds to your child who's in college overseas, you know, sometimes we need to see his enrollment, her enrollment. We need to see a transcript sometimes to ensure that the child is truly enrolled in the university. So we do a lot of this, and we have the capacity to do it.
So again, I would ask the same question I asked in relation to the taxes. What are their specific concerns as it relates to anti-money laundering, AML, for Barbados businesses, for our international business?
What are whose concerns? Ours or
the EU. What are their concerns about? What are we doing wrong for the in AML?
Well, on the AML side, you know what? Suspicious transaction reports is something you can only produce if you have seen in your business a suspicious transaction. They have said point blank that Barbados does not produce sufficient suspicious transaction or suspicious activity reports. You can only produce one of those if based on your matrix, if based on your monitoring, if based on your knowledge of your client, something suspicious happened. So if nothing suspicious happened at a transacting entity, you cannot then produce a report to the FIU. So they've come in, they've done their peer reviews and say that insufficient are not in the system, and that is a mark against you. And we can go on with stuff like that. Go ahead.
The things you guys are telling me, you're going to send me to do my own research, but these things are laughable.
You have to.
They're really, really laughable. I have to go on. I can't believe this.
No, Corey, this is my mission this year with this conference, is to let everybody in Barbados get a better understanding of international business, of transacting, of some of the things that we see and we hear going on. Well, when do you do a suspicious transaction report? Yes, where you have a fear sniff that a client is trying to move bad money, or something as simple as if a client changes a transaction on you, the purpose of the transaction, you know, if he changes the beneficiary of the transaction, simple thing. Sometimes it's a real sniff or something that makes you really suspicious of it. Or also sometimes suspicious transactions are just simply, you may do it if a client, as I said, changed the purpose of a transaction midstream after your question. Or each client that an entity has, or a bank has in its list, has an exception limit, whereby the volume or the magnitude of a transaction, a regular transaction, is known. If your exception limit is 50,000, you know, and today you ask for a transaction that is half million, that is not suspicious. That means that we have to go now and get more information from you on that transaction and ask you about it, due diligence on it, and then understand that there may have been a change in your business. And if we understand that, then we can transact. The question is now, do I do a suspicious transaction report for that, or I just do an exception report for that? So there are things like that, that the processes and the policies in the institutions and their transaction monitoring safeguards what happens to transactions. But the reality is, to tell me that we are not doing sufficient transaction, suspicious transaction reports, and that's a negative, you need to have a better understanding of the transaction and the work, the type of transactions that are going through the jurisdiction. You know, we are doing our best to make sure collectively that not one bad transaction happens. That's the reality. Mm-hmm. Can we do that 100% of the time? We want to. That's the aim. No excuse. The reality is things may happen from time to time, but thankfully, we haven't had any big issues. We haven't had any jaw-dropping, show-stopping transactions through our shores here in Barbados. But as I said, we really want to educate the public, because sensationalism in global media is not the other prong of attack against the jurisdiction.
All right, let's take another
one
call.
Thing, go ahead.
Take another call. Good morning and welcome. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning to the panel and everyone. I am relaying a question that was sent to me. Okay? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this is what the person said. I'm wondering if you can shed some light on what is happening in Barbados now that the PM has expressed her intention to align with the... The reason I'm asking is suddenly... We seem
to align with what?
You know, the Prime Minister said that they were going republic.
Okay.
Right. So out there in the national media, they're saying Barbados is switching the allegiance from Britain to somebody else. I didn't want to call the name. Anyway, the reason I'm asking is suddenly we seem to be having difficulty in sending money to our FC Bank, which is probably the First Caribbean Bank account, to pay our mortgage. Keep in mind that we have remitted funds for the past 5 years. Now the Indian bank here sent back the funds saying that Barbados is on some list. Can't recall what the list is. And also they're saying they tried to send the money by going through another account, and the intermediary bank in Canada sent the funds back as well.
Okay. So, First thing, I would invite you, please. We will keep the information confidential on a case by case, but I would invite you, please, to contact the Biba Secretariat. Take this number, please, 537-2422. 537-2422. And I would like you to give for our database of information, real information, to give us that information, please. Carmel, you spoke to this earlier. I will let you continue on that, Carmel, please.
Okay, thanks, Derek. Caller, I'm not sure if you listened to the program from the very beginning, but really and truly, this is what we have been talking about in terms of the blacklistings, and especially the AML or anti-money laundering blacklisting, which has caused banks to have to use enhanced due diligence, enhanced scrutiny when funds are being sent to Barbados. And for some international banks, we knew about it regarding a bank in Germany. But now you've raised the prospect of a bank in India. We were also told by another member that they were having challenges transferring funds from a bank in the US here. And that is unfortunately because of, first, it was the Financial Action Task Force, which flagged us. And then subsequent to that, we actually got blacklisted out of that by the European Commission. So unfortunately, those are the real implications that we are seeing of this blacklisting and of the transaction of funds to and from Barbados.
So just understand that, speaking regionally again on Barbados, remittances are a major component of our economy. All right, remittances from US, Europe, UK. So the correspondent banking issue has always threatened that segment of our economies. There are islands in the Caribbean to whom remittances are even more critical than they are to Barbados. So any threat to those remittances, any threat to the ability for ordinary people and the regular Barbados, the regular returning national, regular person who've gone out to make their way a better life outside of Barbados and then send funds back maybe to build their house, to buy a property, to gift to their family. It's under threat. It's under threat because somebody sat in an office somewhere in the EU under the head of the OECD and decided that 7 out of 10 and that Barbados was weak and therefore should be blacklisted. And the EU ministers get to hide behind the fact that, oh, this was a recommendation of the OECD. It's not us doing it. The OECD has said, let's do this. So our hands are tight. And then the politicians have come and said, now, yes, and that yes, it's a decision of the OECD and our finance minister. So there's nothing we can do about it. Everybody hiding behind the nets. Threatening the well-being of our states.
Can I go
ahead, please.
You know, I've heard that instead of pointing the fingers sometimes at the international people, we got to ask our question, if the people here in Barbados had done the job. I was told reliably that some of the reports that were supposed to have been submitted have not been submitted now for 4 or 5 years.
I would tell you that we are up to date on reports and on submit reports. I would tell you that we were not always up to date.
Okay.
What I will say is that from 2018, a number of things have happened. And this is myself, I don't do politics. I absolutely do not do politics. But we have done some strengthening in leadership. And through that leadership, we have done some serious institutional strengthening within government and all around. We look at immigration is strengthened. We look at BRA is strengthened. We look at the Ministry of International Business is very strengthened. We look at there's activity at KIPO now. So institutional strengthening, resources, personnel, IT. I think the government has its head in the game 100%. There were lapses before, right? Again, the OECD rated us on stuff between 2015 and 2018. They ought to take a look, and they will have an opportunity through a supplemental review to take a look at us now. And they're going to see a better Barbados that has done the work and continues to do the work.
All right, thank you, caller. It's just gone 19 minutes before noon. It's coming to a point where there'll be no more turns in this program. So when we come back from this break, I'll put a number of comments and questions from our WhatsApp as we wrap up this Biba 2 Hour as they celebrate the Global Business Week. This is the Monday edition of Donor Brass Tacks.
Join us tonight, October 26th at 7 p.m. for our annual public discussion forum. The topic being explored is diversity of global business, the Barbados unique perspective. This topic will examine diversity and the role it plays within global business in Barbados. Senator the Honorable Lisa Cummings, Minister of Tourism and International Transport, Gregory McConney, President and CEO of Brookfield International Bank, Dr. Antonio Alleen, Lecturer in Economics, University of the West Indies, Capel Campus, and Moderator Henderson Holmes, former Executive Director of BIBA, will be panelists for the discussion. Visit www.gbw.biba.bb or call 246-537-2422 for information on how to register.
If only.
There's some questions here that we're putting some question to that says, ask Biba's comment on how the lack of prosecutions or confiscations under confiscating the proceeds under legislation affect our listings, one. And two, ask about the lack of a requirement to register public shareholders and ultimately beneficial owner information is affecting our listing. So they're answering two questions. The lack of how we confiscate the gains under crime in our legislation and prosecutions for white collar crime, etc. And also the lack of requirement to register public shareholders. How is that affecting the listing?
Yes, Corey. And so in actual fact, when you do look at the AML blacklisting, those were the two areas picked up by the Financial Action Task Force that did have implications for our AML blacklisting. But again, as Derek has pointed out, these reports have been looking at historical deficiencies, and they have not really taken into account the strides that have been made since the reviews were done. So, for example, as Derek rightly mentioned, you're seeing the regulators really stepping up to, and even though we don't have a beneficial ownership register that is public, the fact of the matter is that the service providers are required by the regulators to know exactly who their clients are, who the owners of the company are, et cetera, and to be able to, you know, open their books to the regulators when those questions are asked. We also know that the regulators have been extremely diligent about making sure that these corporate trust and service providers are being compliant. Just during our launch of Global Business Week in September, the director of the International Business Unit publicly said that they had suspended a corporate trust and service provider for a month, you know, for being in compliance, right? So that has serious implications. And so while it is true that there have been some historical deficiencies, there have been strides being made, you know, to really address these. And I think it's very interesting how, you know, because I listen to Brass Tacks on occasion, and how your listenership will raise issues on one end, but not necessarily make the connection with some of the things that are happening on the other. I mean, y'all had a whole show about the banking sector and how difficult the banks were making to open bank accounts and, you know, all of this information the banks want from you and why is that necessary. But we are showing you concretely why it is necessary. Because when the banks do not do these things, then you have the international multilateral agencies looking at us and saying that we are a lax jurisdiction and that we are not compliant and that we are not doing the things necessary to protect the global financial system. So you cannot have it both ways.
But we are getting the worst of both worlds because we get in that inconvenience and we still getting blacklisted. So for me, it's like a lose-lose. In fairness to our contributors, there's a WhatsApp that I saw somewhere around talking something to that. So I'm going to get to that, but I'm going to take a call first. Good morning and welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Mm-hmm. I am hearing a narrative that it doesn't really fit well with me. I hear it being referred to that we have been blacklisted because of actions we did not take between 2015 to 2018. Am I correct in saying that?
Yes.
In at least one
side.
Of the instances, yes.
Right. I find that very hard to swallow. That international organization in 2020 will issue a blacklist to a country for not changing rules from 2018. I find that very hard to swallow that the international agency did not take into account any action taken by the jurisdiction between 2018 and 2020 when the blacklist was actually issued. I find that very hard to digest.
It is actually in the report, though, so you can read it. It actually gives you the period of the review. So this is nothing that, you know, necessarily that we are coming with. It's there in black and white.
Please explain why your international organization in 2020 would not take into account the actions taken by the jurisdiction in 2018 and in 2019. Before issuing a blacklist that will have serious financial implications on that country. I just find that very hard to swallow. So could you shed some light and some explanation as to why that would have occurred?
So what they were trying to do, you know, this is made even more egregious because it happened under COVID. COVID, a period that prevented meetings from happening, that prevented some up-to-date reviews from happening. Again, end of 2018, we changed about 14 legislations that needed changing according to those requirements. The ministry was lobbying, trying to get meetings before the OECD met and made their decision in September to feed into the October 6th meeting of the financial ministers of the EU. The reality is COVID prevented, or I dare say did not allow some meetings to happen whereby there could have been some proper review. That's why we're going now for a supplementary review before September. Part of their argument was that, okay, yes, you made some regulatory changes in at the end of 2018, we need ample time to review the implementation and the regulating of those legislative changes. 2 years to review, and they couldn't do it before then. That's hard to swallow also. Doing this under COVID, that's even tougher to swallow. So absolutely, it is a absolute bitter pill that is going to cause us a measure of pain. All we can do is say that we are on the path to get a supplemental review whereby they can evidence that not only that having implemented the changes, that they're being followed through and they're probably being overseen and regulated.
Okay, I thank you for that response. I just see the initial comment as being very, I just see it very, very unrealistic that an international body would not take into account what the government did in 2018 or what the government did in 2019 or in the beginning of 2020 and just issue a blacklist based on what was done between 2015 to 2018. I just think not bear any of the blame for what has happened under their watch. And I thank
you. Understand fully that myself and Carmel are people who do not speak politically. And you can go look at the website, your website, the FinCEN, the financial ministers meeting, and that risk documented, and also OECD report risk documented that this review is for the 2015 to the June 2015 to May 2018 period.
Right here on the website. No, it is actually a deadline. So it's a period and a deadline. So it is here on the website now. Yeah.
It just so happened that aligned with governmental change in Barbados. So what myself and Carmel are saying isn't anything political at all. When you hear the government speak to it, it's not political. It's in black and white. It's what the OECD maliciously did.
My thing is, though, I thank the caller for the question and actually helping the public, because people could walk away thinking that because that was when we had a change of government
in
Barbados. But it's actually a deadline period set, because the same question came to my mind when you said that they do some reviews twice a year or so. So the question would be, during that period, shouldn't there have been reviews? But this is something actually separate, where they have a term for you to complete certain things by.
Yeah.
And that term just so happened to fall within our change of government at the time. So the timing was just a little suspicious based on the color, but it was not a timeline set by Barbados, by either party. It would have been set by the EU. So that clears up that. So it's still good that it was raised, so we can actually get the opportunity. Because other people out there may be thinking the same thing, and now they are educated to the fact that it was actually a deadline set in 2015 to be completed by 2018. Well, that music tells us it's time to join our brothers and sisters across the region to find out what's happening with our CARICOM brothers and sisters. So it's time to take the regional roundup, and we'll be back with more from Biba and then more from Down to Brass Tacks, the Monday edition, with your host, Corey Lane.
Here is your OCM regional news. I am Natasha Choom. In the Bahamas, police officers say they are ready and able to keep law and order in the country. A curfew and lockdowns continue in New Providence because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Today, the Parliament is to debate a motion tabled by the Prime Minister last week to extend the curfew and emergency measures until November 30th. Police Commissioner Paul Rule says his officers are keeping watch.
Whatever the mandate requires of us, we are prepared to do. Of course, we are in a state of emergency, and so where the normal operation that we would have done under the normal circumstances simply changed, because you cannot do much of what we used to do, so those resources now are shifted to manage the emergency orders.
The commissioner also says some business operators are hell-bent on disobeying the orders and regulations.
Members of the public have been calling the hotline, and we have been responding and taking actions where we find persons in breach. Particularly, you should have seen something in your news this morning that I sent out, where we went to a location, I believe, on Mount Royal Avenue. And not only did we ticket the owner, but we also issued citations for the patrons that were in that place illegally.
The opposition in the parliament has said it will not support the proposed extension of the curfew and lockdown. The Dominica government will table legislation allowing for persons over the age of 18 to be in possession of 28 grams of marijuana. The government is moving towards the decriminalization of the drug for medicinal and other purposes in the future. Prime Minister Roosevelt Skerrett, speaking on his weekly television program last night, said the amendments to the existing legislation will be debated when the parliament meets later today.
This is all part of a justice reform program that people who are in possession of 28 grams or less, that they will not be charged and prosecuted, and these things can be on their records for the rest of their lives. So we're going to Parliament to have an amendment to this act, and to allow people to be able to have in their possession and for the use for religious purposes and other purposes 28 grams of marijuana. And I believe in this amendment we'll also allow for persons to be able to have a couple of trees planted on their private premises.
Mrs. Garrett said in the amendment, persons will be allowed to have a couple trees planted on their private premises, but there will be some conditions.
This will be part of the amendments. Of course, there'll be other conditions that you can't smoke in the public, you can't smoke on the bus. Everybody's on the bus, you can't smoke on the bus, and et cetera, et cetera. But this is not, we're not passing this legislation. From my view, this has not been presented to the parliament to quote unquote free up the herb, as we say in anything. It is really about not prosecuting people for the possession of 28 grams or less. And this is a progressive move by the government.
Mr. Scarrett said the initiative is in keeping with a promise by his ruling party in the campaign for the December 2019 general election. The Minister with Responsibility for Culture in Barbados, John King, says the statue of Lord Nelson will be removed from its location in National Heroes Square on November 16th. The date is observed as the International Day of Tolerance. Minister King, whose office is leading the project, described the decision as a step towards the healing of the nation. The space left by the removal of the statue is to be filled by pieces of art from locals. Minister King feels it is time to remove the statue.
And that new story is going to be about what happens next.